Hey, if you're a journalist who uses the tool Help a Reporter Out, or Harrow, listen up. Harrow is moving to Cision's new app, Connectively. But what is Connectively? Well, imagine a place where you can quickly connect with expert sources for your next story. Connectively is a new app from Cision that's changing the way journalists, like us, content creators, experts and PRs work together. So if you're in search of credible sources, Connectively is your next stop. With just a click, you can publish your queries. These go straight to a feed where experts from loads of different backgrounds can respond, giving you their expertise. So go on, visit connectively.us to sign up for free. That's connectively.us. Connectively.us.
And welcome to Freelancing for Journalists. We're now on series 13 of the podcast, which I don't know about you, Lily, but this just makes us sound really old, yeah. I think, at this point that we've made it to series 13. This series, we're talking all about diversifying your income, all the different ways that you can earn money as a freelance journalist.
Yeah, so today what we've got coming up is an episode all about copywriting. This is something Emma and I have both dabbled in a little bit, but we're definitely not experts in this area. So luckily, we have the expertise of two journalists stroke copywriters, Peter Ranscombe and Ella Delancey-Jones, who are going to be spilling the beans on what content and copywriting is all about. But first, we're going to start, as always, with our win of the week. So over to you, Emma. What's yours?
Okay, so my win this week might seem like quite a basic one, but this is just to remind me that sometimes things do go right. Because I've had the past two features I've been working on, finding people to speak to about these topics has been like pulling teeth. Like, I've had to work so hard to get comment, it's almost not been worth it. And then last week I was commissioned to do a news analysis piece, 1,000 words, pretty quick turnaround, they need it by Thursday. And I said yes, even though I really didn't have capacity to do it, but I was just crossing everything that this one would go well. I only sent out the emails for expert comment yesterday, and I already have everything that I need. So sometimes it does go well. Sometimes those experts all come forward when you need them to, and they're available when you need them to be, and it's going to be a straightforward one. And this is just to remind me that it's not always such a massive hurdle to overcome.
Yeah,
every article. And so yeah, Lily, what's your win this week?
I think mine is it's a techie one, and I really had to think of my feet yesterday, and I was doing an interview, so I've got, as I mentioned, this new computer, hooray, but I hadn't set things up on it. I went to do an interview, I got into my Otter account, started recording, I was like, yay, I tested it, it's all working. And then as the other person was speaking, I noticed it wasn't picking up their voice. It was picking up me, but not them. And I was like, what's going on here? And then I thought I can record on my phone, but like my phone is not big enough. We were chatting for like an hour. So I was having like a bit of a flap in my head, thinking, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? I need to record this because I've got so out of the habit of writing shorthand notes. And then I was like, we're on Zoom. Like, I just record the Zoom. And then I put the Zoom, I sort out whatever the issue is, and then I can put that into the transcription service. So that's what I did. I said to her, do you mind? I'm just going to record this, and then I'll sort out the audio after. And it turned out that basically there's been a Chrome update which has turned something off, and all I had to do was to go and enable it, and then it will now record what's coming through my speakers. And I just put the Zoom, and I just got the Zoom running, I had the Otter running, went and had some lunch, took the dog for a walk. By the time I came back, it transcribed it all for me. I hadn't lost any time, and it was done. So that was my win, thinking on my feet, getting it sorted, and it was all good in the end.
Yeah, fantastic. At least if it's something like Otter, you can see immediately that it's not working. So you've not kind of got a dictaphone that's failed to record and then you go to press play later after the interview's done. You could actually solve it in the moment. So phew, disaster averted.
Definitely. Yes, it was a big sigh of relief. Right, okay, I think it's time to move on, so let's go and introduce our guests.
You both have lots of experience in copywriting alongside their work as freelance journalists.
Today we have with us Peter Ranscombe, a freelance journalist since 2014, who's written for The Lancet, The Times and Decanter, amongst others. Peter also does copywriting, including writing press releases, advertising features, reports, website texts, and ghost-written opinion pieces and articles.
And we also have with us Ella Delancey-Jones, who in her journalism capacity has written for The Independent, Thomson Reuters, Glamour, Stylist, Grazia, and more. Ella also offers a digital copywriting service, creating articles and social content for brands and businesses. So thank you both for joining us today. There's lots to talk about here, so we should dive right in. And I guess the first thing to kind of start with is if you could tell us about the copywriting work that you do, and I suppose how you got into that in the first place. You know, was it the journalism that came first, the copywriting, how it started? Ella, I'll come to you first on that.
Yeah, sure. Thank you for having me, by the way. So I've been a copywriter for about 5 years now. I work with a wide range of clients and I've got kind of my fingers in a few pies, to be honest. So I work with tech clients, design agencies, I work for wellbeing platforms, and then on the other side I do quite a lot of social media copywriting and some management as well for lots of different brands and agencies. And a lot of my copywriting work, or content writing, we'll come on to that later, comes in the form of personal branding for clients on LinkedIn. And in terms of getting into it, I kind of fell into it in a way. So my background is consumer tech PR. So I've got a PR background, but I studied journalism. I left an agency in 2018 to go freelance because I think I was just becoming really unhappy with agency life, what my trajectory was looking like, didn't really want to go any further in where I was going, and there was only certain bits of PR that I was really, really enjoying. So I wanted to expand on my journalism work, but then I realised after just having a look what was out there, there was just stuff that I could do that was just writing, and that's always been my favourite piece of any kind of work. I've always been kind of writer. That's been where my bread and butter is, really. So just to know that there was copywriting out there that I could do. I think my first copywriting job I found on Airtasker. It's kind of one of those people just put random jobs up. And I just thought it was doing blogs for a wedding website. And then I realised, like, there's something in this. I can make something of this. And then since then, it's just been my main focus alongside the journalism.
Yeah, fantastic. I think it's really interesting, isn't it, to think about all those different ways that you can use your writing skills that you might not kind of realise when you're studying to be a journalist and thinking about where your career might go. We've got lots to dig into there. But Peter, let's ask you as well, sort of the copywriting work you do, I think it might be a bit different to Ella's, and sort of how it came about for you.
Similarly to Ella, I would think of myself as a writer first and foremost, and journalism and copywriting as different expressions of that. So I studied physics at St Andrews and trained as a journalist through in Glasgow on the course that Strathclyde and Glasgow Kelly used to run together with a view to doing science writing, and that's part of what I do now, both on the journalism side and on the copywriting side. But from the start, I was looking at different ways of using my writing. And so I began my career with the Scotsman newspaper. I was a journalist with the Scotsman for 9 years. And even back then, I was doing copywriting as part of my work outside the Scotsman. So writing for charities or writing for churches. And when I took voluntary redundancy back in 2014, that felt like a natural point at which to expand on the copywriting work. So a lot of the work I do now is as a subcontractor for public relations firms. So writing a lot of the things you would expect a copywriter to do, things like press releases, website text, ghostwriting, comment and opinion pieces, advertising features, blog entries, all the normal kind of stuff. On the other side of copywriting, I do some work directly for a small number of clients as well. And that tends to be things like case studies, perhaps, or writing or editing longer kinds of reports. But also I would put together the in-house writing I do under copywriting as well. So maybe writing for in-house magazines. So using a lot of the same skills as a journalist, using the same interview skills, using the same researching skills and the same storytelling and narrative skills, but doing it for a subject rather than for a reader, if that makes sense. So we'll maybe explore that a bit more.
Yeah, and it's so interesting that there's so many different types of copywriting or writing, however you want to label it. It's just made me remember when I first started freelancing, I was doing some work for Sustrans, a sustainable transport charity, and I wrote a leaflet for them for Cyclist. And at the time, I wasn't really sure like what this was, but looking back, I'm now thinking, oh, that was copywriting. But something that also kind of comes up in conversation, I guess, and we both alluded to this, is copywriting and content writing. And sometimes those are used interchangeably, but I know within the industry, sometimes people can be quite protective about both of those terms. Peter, I think you've come across this. What's your sort of expertise of like the difference between content writing and copywriting?
So for me personally, everything you write is content. So the distinction for me becomes between independent editorial on the journalism side and then copywriting on the other side, where with journalism, your customer, if you like, is the reader or the viewer or the listener, your audience. Whereas on the copywriting side, your boss, if you like, is the subject that you're writing about. It's the person who's paying for it. However, talking to people who do more advertising-based copywriting, they tend to talk about their work as copywriting. And then the kind of work I described, doing work for public relations agencies or directly for companies, as content marketing or content writing, because you're writing something that's more akin to journalism in terms of how it appears, the form of it, as opposed to slogans for advertising or very hard sales stuff that might go on a website.
And that's interesting. So it sort of harks back to the days of advertising, where perhaps this idea of content writing came about. Sorry, copyright. See, I'm getting confused now. Copywriting came about. And I guess kind of the stuff now that we think of as copywriting, which is more content writing, didn't even exist, perhaps. There was journalism and there was advertising and there wasn't much in the middle. And now it's kind of, particularly with the internet, become this big kind of mix of everything. Ella, have you come across this kind of thinking that there is a distinction between content writing and copywriting?
Yeah, definitely. I sometimes can be quite guilty of using the terms interchangeably, which is a bit of a bad habit, but I do have my own definition of them. I think the reason being is because when I have clients approach me for content or copywriting, however they come to me and say it, I have to really dig in and think, what really do you want? Because for me, copywriting, kind of how Peter said about it, was more around it's more about the action. You're persuading someone, you're wanting someone to do something. So for that, for me, is more about my website writing, my emails writing. I feel like it's a bit more concise, maybe to the point. I think sometimes it's more about short-term results and about that persuasion. Whereas I think the content side is a bit more of a journey. So it's maybe a bit more of a value add. It's sometimes a bit more longer form. And that for me is what I would imagine my personal branding client stuff to be, the blogs, and on the social media side, creating a bit of a value add asset. And I always think that content is less ephemeral, maybe, than copywriting. Maybe about some, like, finding a permanent home for something that people will come back to. But that's how I look at it.
I think in some ways it's about different stages in the marketing funnel. So perhaps content writing is further up the marketing funnel. It's about people becoming familiar with a brand, whether it's a company or a charity or an individual. And then maybe that traditional advertising copywriting is further down the funnel, about somebody making the purchase.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you've both sort of immediately, as you were talking there, the main thing that I was thinking is, are you always sure what the client wants? Because in journalism, I make, I would say, 90% of my income from journalism. And I do other things. I've written reports and it's kind of stuff that's just come to me and I've sort of said, yes, okay. But in journalism, I know what's expected. If someone says, I want a feature on this, get me 2 interviews, or I want a news story, find some independent comment, I know exactly what I'm delivering. I think the thing that would really worry me about copywriting is, are you getting a clear brief? Is there lots of backwards and forwards? Are there lots of drafts? Does the client know what they want? You're both nodding a bit there. I'm going to come to you, Ella, first on that one.
Yeah, so sometimes it can be a bit of a journey. When I set up with clients or people that want to have content writing when maybe they really need a copywriter, just try and have a discovery call with them to figure out what it is exactly they want. Because if they're wanting, you know, a few thousand word blogs on their website and they're coming to me and saying, well, we haven't got any new customers through this, then they're looking at the wrong kind of content that they need. They want sort of conversion copy. So it's really worth having the conversation. Often with clients, you're dealing with people who maybe don't have a marketing or writing background at all. They just kind of know they need something and they think copy, they think content, and it's all the same. And it's usually for us to work out, unless you're sort of embedding into an already established content team. That's how I found it.
Yeah, Peter, have you found that as well? Is it sometimes the onus on you to kind of try and clarify what it is they want and what your role in that is going to be before you start? I imagine that comes with experience of trying to avoid headaches down the line.
It does come with experience, but it's also really similar to taking on a commission as a journalist. So there are some commissioning editors who think, oh yes, I need an article on this. But actually, when you dig down and ask, well, who's the audience and what's the key message you want to get across in this article? So when I'm training junior journalists or I'm training junior public relations staff, I talk to them about getting across a key message in one sentence. And it's the same when it comes to copywriting, trying to get a client to describe what they want and to narrow it down to that level of focus. I'm very lucky with the public relations agencies I work with. They will often have a very clearly defined brief of what they want. It's sometimes more with the direct clients that I need to do that consultancy bit first and ask them a few questions about what the outcome is, which audience they're trying to reach, what message they're trying to get across, and then we can shape that brief. But that's no different to dealing with some commissioning editors, particularly in larger organizations where they're handling a lot of copy and perhaps their brief to you as a journalist isn't as tight as it could be.
Do you find that there can be tiers of people that your copy then has to go through? Because some of the copywriting I've done, I do get a bit bamboozled by the fact that I've written something, then I don't hear anything for weeks, and then it comes back and it's been completely rewritten. And then I'm like, well, why didn't you just write it yourself? And I don't quite understand the structure. And there seems to be agencies that work for clients, but those agencies then use freelancers, and they have like various different processes. And I've never quite managed to get my head around all of that. Ella, do you find that there are different, I guess it's different if you're working directly with a client, but if you're not, is there kind of a structure you need to be aware of? And will there be other people subbing your work, I suppose?
Yeah. So something I've found through my years of doing this is that sometimes you really have to take the rough with the smooth. I feel like every client is different. It's really unlike when you're working with working in journalism and maybe you're working directly with an editor. as you say, sometimes you're working with someone who's directly with the founder of the company. Sometimes it's a bigger agency and you're working through levels of people. And you're right, sometimes I will be hired to do a job and I do it to the very best of my ability. And then a piece of content that I think, do you know what, that's really good, will go through and come back to me. And it's almost like a Frankenstein monster, because people with maybe less skill in that area think, well, we haven't got this, and they've got this maybe idea in their head that every single sentence needs to have a call to action, and they kind of see it in their mind the way they want to do it. And it can be quite difficult, but I think that comes with experience, in the sense of having the confidence to go back and say, well, no, I wrote it in this way because, and I think if you can back it up, then that makes things a lot easier. But sometimes it can be a bit of a battle of wills.
Yeah, and you've got that thing where there's just too many cooks sometimes, and exactly. Everybody feels like they want to have their opinion on it. I mean, there's been so much talk recently on kind of social media and in our Facebook community just about if you can make money from being a freelance journalist, and if there are enough opportunities anymore, and the pay, and kind of the answers are always that you need to diversify your income, which is, you know, hence us doing this series. Do you find that there are more opportunities in copywriting work, and is the pay better? That's what everybody wants to know. So Peter, I'll come to you on that.
Certainly in Scotland, the pay is better when it comes to copywriting. So when I started off as a freelancer, I deliberately pitched my copywriting prices above the price of the highest paid journalism I was doing at that point, because I wanted to carry on doing journalism. That's my passion. And so if I was going to spend time doing copywriting, it had to be worthwhile money-wise. And there's definitely work out there. So a lot of the work I get as a copywriter comes either as subcontracting work or through recommendations, but also people seeing the journalism as a shop window and knowing they need something ghostwritten or they need an advertising feature written and approaching me directly in that way. When I talk to freelance journalists who are leaving staff jobs and going freelance for the first time, and they ask about copywriting, I often tell them to kind of write down a list of people they can approach. So on the journalism side of things, it might be commissioning editors at the publication that they're leaving, but also colleagues who have gone on to work in other places and might be in a position to commission stuff. And it's the same when it comes to the copywriting. It's about thinking about which of the public relations agencies I've dealt with as a journalist. You know, is there the opportunity to go from partially being a poacher to being a gamekeeper in that sense? But also thinking about the organisations or the companies that you've written about as a journalist, who might now have a requirement for copywriting or content writing.
Yeah, I mean, the copywriting opportunities that have come to me, they've found me through the journalism work and thinking, right, you're a kind of specialist in this field, we need someone, and they've just sort of emailed me and said, would you be interested in doing this? Ella, I mean, do you find that as you get more experienced, you know, a lot of people are coming to you? How much are you having to hunt out opportunities, and how much is kind of clients that you've just worked for regularly or that have passed you on to other clients?
Yeah. So nowadays, I would say that I have a lot of clients coming to me. Mostly that's through word of mouth. Someone, a project ends and they've got someone else who needs something done. It's through my website. It's also a lot through LinkedIn. Back in the day, I used to go around looking for sort of small websites that had blogs that were a bit rubbish and just offer my services. And it was quite a quick way to get a run of very small clients. Obviously, it was quite badly paid then because I was just starting off. I probably wouldn't do that now just because I'm working with those larger agencies and taking on bigger projects, which are retainer work. So it's a lot more regular. But obviously, doing those holds me in good stead to approach those larger agencies or clients if I needed to.
Yeah. And the one thing that strikes me as well is that obviously, you know, we've all got training in journalism. We've had people come to us, you know, either because we've got a specialism or that, you know, they think they're a writer. they can take on this project for me. Again, that's how it's always happened with me. People have always approached me. I will admit, though, I don't think I'm that great a copywriter because I just cannot switch off that journalism part of my brain. And I find it very, very difficult to understand what the client wants and to write from their perspective. So I just wonder if either of you have done any training and if perhaps we shouldn't just assume just because we're journalists, we can also be content and copywriters, because it is a very, very different skill. And it's certainly something I've struggled with. So Peter, have you just learnt this along the way, or have you had any training?
I didn't have any formal training starting out. And because I see writing as the overall skill and journalism and copywriting as subsets of that, I kind of see it as taking the same skills and applying them in different ways. I think a good journalist will make a good copywriter because they will be curious, they'll ask questions, they'll be good at interviewing people, they'll be good at doing research. And those are all the same skills you need as a copywriter. The difference is in the change in mindset, going from thinking of your reader or your viewer, your audience as being the customer, to thinking about the subject that you're writing about as being the customer. But later on, after the lockdowns, I did a wee bit of my own continuous professional development, and I did one of the copywriting courses that Jackie Barry runs for journalism.co.uk. And those are specifically aimed at journalists who are perhaps interested in moving into copywriting. And I wish I'd done that 9 years earlier, because I think Jackie's course was really good, particularly when it came to the more concise advertising and marketing kinds of copywriting.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'll dig that out, actually, and get a link into our show notes. I'm still not convinced that I can make a good copywriter, though. I really struggle. And I think perhaps I don't want to produce something that promotes a company, because intrinsically as a journalist, that I just find that really jarring. It's more of a philosophical objection to it, I think, perhaps.
But you can do copywriting for good. You know, copywriting isn't just about big blue chip companies. It's about the small entrepreneurial companies who make a product or service that's really helping people. And in the same breath, it can be about charities. So a lot of the copywriting work I've done is to help charities raise money, but also raise awareness, particularly when it comes to medical research charities.
Yeah, I think it's because I always get contacted by the big conglomerate. That's my problem. And Ella, how about you? Have you done any training?
So not officially, but my background in PR really, really helped me. It was invaluable because I was working on loads of different clients, and you're constantly writing press releases, case studies, lots of different things, and you have to switch between them quite quickly. So that was really, really invaluable, amazing experience to have. And then I think since then, it's just been about getting better and better with time and kind of just being able to switch it on, but also having that, obviously not just saying, oh, I'm getting better and better all the time, critiquing my own work, taking constructive feedback from other people, especially if they know what they're talking about, and then making those tweaks where needed. And it's always a skill that's in development. It's not like, okay, I'm a really good copywriter now and that's it. So, I mean, if there is accessible training down the line, I wouldn't be averse to it. I think it's always a good thing to keep improving your craft. But in terms of my training now, it's just been through experience.
And the other thing we get asked quite a lot about is sort of conflict of interest. Don't know if you ever find yourself in a situation where, I don't know, something that you've done as copyright, you know, on copywriting work might then end up being something that you're asked to cover as a journalist. I don't know, like somebody once came to me and asked if I'd write some content for like a health business. And I was like, I don't think I can, because I'm doing so much kind of health news reporting that I feel that conflict could come up at any time. So I need to be able to kind of draw that line, or else I'm just making my life quite complicated. Do you ever have kind of decisions that you have to make, Peter, around kind of keeping those parts of your work?
So all the commissioning editors that I work with as a journalist know that I'm a copywriter as well. It's in the signature of every email I send. It's on every business card I give out. It's been on my LinkedIn profile and website from the very beginning. So when people approach me, they know that I wear both hats. But it comes down to your own morals, your own ethics at the end of the day. So, for example, I write two news features for the Press and Journal newspaper each month for their business supplement. And one of the articles was about students starting their own businesses. So I interviewed people from the three big universities in the north of Scotland. But I also wanted to approach an agency that helps students start their own businesses. And I'd done some copywriting work for them. So I was just up from with the editor at the B&J and said, look, these are the best people. These are the most credible people to interview. I've written case studies for them. I've delivered training for them. Do you think there's a conflict of interest there? And let the commissioning editor make that decision. And 99 times out of 100, they're not bothered because they trust your judgment. They trust your ethics and your morals to make that decision. In America, I think it would be slightly different, though. I think my understanding of the media in America is they would draw a much harder line between the copywriting side and the journalism side. And they're much less likely to commission a journalist who also does particularly corporate copywriting.
That's interesting. Because I don't know if either of you have come across this, but I've had it a couple of times. I think Emma's had this once, where I've been contacted by a business, particularly when I wrote a lot of personal finance, that has asked if they can pay me to write something which I can then place in a national newspaper, as if that is something that is done. And sometimes I think they're like just trying it on, but sometimes I also think they're just completely clueless about how journalism works, and they think that that's how it works. You just pay a journalist to write about your company and effectively do product placement for you. I've even been offered affiliate marketing commission if I mention their company in an article. I'm like, oh, is this really happening? Are people, accepting this? Basically bribery to write about companies. But I guess it just shows you how kind of blurred the lines have come between sort of PR and journalism. So I just wonder, Ella, has this ever happened to you? Have you ever been asked to place something?
Yeah. So I mean, right back from the beginning in my PR career, I had lots of clients sort of come to us and say, we want to be in Forbes. And it's like, I think everyone's heard that in PR. I want to be on the front cover of Forbes. And it's like, okay, what you want is advertising. But yes, I have, where, as you say, those lines can get blurred. We're doing something that's organic. So maybe like a blog or, an article for their website, whatever it might be. And then they sort of come back and say, oh, can we give this to, can we put this out as a press release, or can we put this in the newspaper or wherever it is? And you just have to explain, well, that no one's going to even take a look at it, because one, it's not news, and two, it's just completely self-promotional. So I think you're right. I don't necessarily think people are trying it on. I just think that they are quite clueless when they come to it and they see these big advertorial pieces in newspapers and think, I want to do that. And it's like, you can do that. We have to pay them to do it. But yes, yeah. I have come across that. And I think it's just about managing their expectations and, telling them that's not going to be possible.
Yeah. And I suppose with advertising and advertorials, they're not these days, not always that clearly marked up. Like there might be like a really small banner or something. So yeah, that's not surprising. Peter, have you had any experience with this?
I have, and back in daily newspapers, we used to call it double dipping, where somebody would try and be paid by a client and then paid by the newspaper to write the article. And as a commissioning editor, I've edited magazines in the past. It's something I'm very wary of, and do my homework on new freelancers when I use them, because I think both situations exist. I think people are trying it on, but also it is what Ella's described there, people not understanding the way that journalism and independent editorial works. And we talk about the lines being blurred. I don't think the lines are blurred. The Advertising Standards Authority is very, very clear on this, that the reader needs to know whether they're looking at an advert or whether they're looking at independent editorial. And at the end of the day, if somebody is trying to pass off a piece of advertising as independent editorial, that's fraud. You're trying to defraud the reader. You're trying to confuse or bamboozle the reader.
Yeah, I had this from somebody and I was absolutely gobsmacked. They wanted to pay me to write something on a health topic to then place. I mean, step one is I don't just write articles and then say to editors, here, have this article. That's not how that works. So I kind of pushed back and said, well, this is a massive conflict of interest. I would never do this. This isn't how it works. But then they replied and going, oh, so what would you be open to? And I was like, have people actually done this? Like I had a back and forth with them. And they said, yeah, we had a journalist who did this. But we, you know, we let them write whatever they want. We weren't kind of saying what they had to say about the topic. And I was like, but they're being paid twice. That's a conflict of interest. I had to really kind of say, this isn't, you can't do this. And I don't know who that person was, but every single other journalist that I've spoken to has said, well, of course I would say to that. That's horrific. So hopefully our standard, our moral compasses are all... But I think if an editor found you'd done that, that you'd no longer be working. You wouldn't be working for them ever again. It does lead us on to talking a bit about branding. If you've got these two kind of aspects to your business, how do you brand yourself? Do you have kind of a separate website for the copywriting, for the journalism? How do you sort of explain to clients, I suppose, those different aspects of your work? Ella, how do you approach that?
So I don't have separate socials or separate websites or anything like that. I know a lot of people do. They'd like to keep things quite separate. But to be honest, it's because I don't really want to have to spend any longer on social media and sort of branding than I have to, because I do it all the time for other people. But I do have a website, which is a good introduction to me, what I offer, my previous works, my journalism, my copywriting and my social media work is all on there. My services and my portfolio. It's not that hard to navigate. It's not rammed with stuff. It's just a good starting point to get the ball rolling, to get someone to come and talk to me. Most of my, Peter said, I've got business cards as well. It's in the footnote of my signature, what I do. And I do work quite hard on my own personal brand over on LinkedIn. So that looks like posting a few times a week under different content pillars. So adding value for potential clients, tips for freelancers, and then maybe something that interests me or that I'm passionate about to give someone an idea of who I am and what it's like to work with me. So that's kind of it. I've got my website, I've got my business cards. And when I speak to someone, I obviously explain that I do wear a lot of different hats, and that's what I do.
Yeah, I think I keep hearing journalists sort of talk more and more about using LinkedIn. I think as other social media platforms sort of, you know, dying a death, going bananas, whatever, that maybe the kind of boring CV one is the place where we can actually kind of control our image and control what we're putting out there. Peter, how do you sort of manage that sort of promotional side of your work?
Very similar to Ella in that I use a website as a shop window. So I have one page about journalism, one page about copywriting, one page about training. And it does help to kind of manage expectations then and push people in certain directions. So if it's a commissioning editor looking to commission a piece of journalism, it's very obvious what I do in those areas. If it's an agency or a direct client looking to commission copywriting, there are examples of what I do in those areas. I came off most social media back in 2019, but I stayed on LinkedIn because it was the one platform where I had received commissions or I had received inquiries in the past. And exactly what you've said there, Emma, since X or Twitter went belly up, it's amazing how LinkedIn has changed and how the amount of traffic on the platform has increased.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you said you found work through LinkedIn as well. I think what would be really useful for our listeners is perhaps if you could both give some pointers on, like, if you're starting out as a freelance writer, you're interested in content or copywriting, like, where should you be looking? I know you've given some tips about kind of contacting companies, but are there any sort of specific spaces or newsletters where there are opportunities that perhaps people that are new to copywriting should be looking? Peter, you're nodding away.
Yeah, I think freelance writing jobs, Sean's email newsletter is a really good starting point. And she does really well to split jobs into what's available journalism-wise, what's coming up copywriting-wise, and what's coming up fiction-wise. And I think Alistair's Right at Home email newsletter does a similar kind of thing. Jackie Barry's course is a really good starting point for journalists who maybe are being made redundant or are maybe looking to diversify, as we talked about earlier on. That's a really good place to start with copywriting if it's totally new and totally foreign to you.
And then, are there any other places or resources that you'd recommend?
Yes, yeah, so I mean, I would agree with Peter. Those newsletters are really, really, really good resources. I find most of my work on LinkedIn, and sometimes that's not usually in the job section. What I do is a lot of keyword search, because some people don't use LinkedIn perhaps in the way that they could, so they don't put up a job post. They might literally fling out a post saying, need a copywriter, anyone know anyone? And that's how I found quite a few people. I mean, I can't really express enough how useful LinkedIn has been for me over the last year or so. The landscape has completely changed. I think, Emma, you described it as the boring CV one, and it was, wasn't it? It was so dry. I avoided it for years, but that landscape's really, really changed now, and there's so much connection to be found. There's a lot of work to be found if you're looking for it in the right places.
Yeah, I think that's really good advice, kind of about knowing where to look and knowing where to find legitimate clients, because I think there are a lot of kind of platforms that are, you know, for writing jobs where people are kind of expected to sign up to your little writing jobs that might not pay very much at all. And it's kind of, is this even legitimate? Is this a good way in? So I think finding those reliable opportunities that are not just trying to exploit you is kind of half the battle, isn't it, in the first
place? Yeah. I think that the biggest red flag warning, I think if obviously journalists are listening, they probably would know this, but there's been a few posts I've seen throughout my time saying, I've just signed up to this website and they've asked me to pay a fee, and after that I'm gonna get these jobs. Is it a scam? And it's like, yeah, it is. No one will ever ask you to pay to write for them, so it's just kind of keeping your head on your shoulders with that and not getting carried away with false promises.
Yeah, in fact, what I've found on LinkedIn is when I applied, it was a copywriting job that I had to do a test, and they paid me to do the test, and that's like unheard of in general.
Yeah,
and they did actually pay. So yeah, that was good. I think, and I don't think they used the copy, I'm not sure, but I think there were three people shortlisted and they paid everyone to do the test. So yeah, but I do think in that respect sometimes yeah, it there are definitely benefits over journalism work. I think that's been really useful though, and I've certainly learned loads. I don't know whether I'm entirely convinced about whether it's an area that I want to do more work in, but I think for our listeners it's been really, really useful guidance and steps there. So thank you so much to both of you. Before we sign off, though, we'd like to get a recommendation from you both of a piece of work by a freelance journalist. So, Peter, can we come to you first? What would your shout out be?
So I do a lot of drinks writing, both sort of whiskey and wine and beers. And so the freelance piece I'm going to recommend is by Chris Losh. So Chris used to be the editor of Imbibe magazine, really cool drinks magazine, and has now returned to freelancing. And he writes a lot about alcohol-free drinks. So I've been following what Chris has been writing about the UK market for a long time. But one of his most recent pieces was for an American website called 750 Daily. And it was about the growth of alcohol-free drinks in America. And that was really fascinating, both from a, a reader's point of view, but also from a journalist's point of view, thinking, you know, is there maybe opportunities over there as well?
Yeah, that's really interesting. And yeah, spotting where like trends are going as well, and if they're in different markets. Excellent. And Ella, what's your recommendation?
So I'm really, really enjoying reading Marissa Bates' Substack newsletter at the moment. It's called Writing About Women. At the moment, most of her pieces have got a focus on navigating new motherhood. She's very much in that season of her life, as am I. And sometimes it feels like she's just taken the thoughts out of my head and put them on the page. I resonate so much. I cry pretty much every single time I read one of her pieces. And she's just so good at evoking emotion with words. So yeah, love it every time it drops into my inbox.
Very fantastic. That's a really good recommendation. And yes, there are so many newsletters out there now. And when you find that one that is kind of really resonates with you at the moment, or you just, and you look forward to it coming in your inbox, that's such a nice thing for journalists to be able to sort of share their thoughts and their work in that way. We will put all of those recommendations and any resources that were mentioned in today's episode in the show notes. So if there's anything there that Peter or Ella mentioned that you want to find out more about, have a look out for that link. So yeah, that's it for this episode. If you want bonus podcast episodes, you can become a premium newsletter subscriber, where you get access to an extra weekly newsletter, of which a podcast is part of that, but there are other resources you can get from that as well. And anything else you want to know about freelancing for journalists, it can all be found on our website, freelancingforjournalists.com. So bye for now.
Goodbye.
Bye.